Right, here we go then. Here across Merseyside, we head towards the weekend. Reopening of pubs and restaurants. Hairdressers will open for the first time too. It's fair to say that there's a feeling of cautious optimism in the air. I suppose coupled with a little bit of worry too. Also, the government is publishing its guidelines today, as we've just heard, how the schools are going to get back in September. But are we ready? Are we ready? Well, let's try and make some sense of it all. Professor Bertie Squire is with us, as I mentioned before, Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. He's also Honorary Consultant in Infectious Diseases at the Royal too. Bertie, good morning. Good to have you with us again. If we can start, first of all, a little further afield with the Leicester lockdown. A report yesterday from Public Health England found no explanation of these outbreaks in care homes, hospital settings or industrial processes. So it seems nobody's really sure what's happened in Leicester.
Good morning. You're right, I think, in one sense. But we should perhaps just go back a little bit and think about why the lockdown came into place. And what we do know is that the seven-day infection rate for Leicester was 135 per 100,000 people. So don't want to throw too many numbers at you, but that's three times higher than the next highest city. And hospital admissions in Leicester were 6 to 10 per day, compared to 1 per day in other hospital trusts. So I think those differences with other cities meant that it was important to think about closing things down. And if you think about the concern we had as a country, and you hear about the discussion that if we had locked down in the UK a week earlier, we would have saved a large number of lives. You can see how locking down in Leicester again now with those numbers is important. Yeah. What I think you're alluding to, though, is we don't understand why those numbers are that much higher. It's not been possible to identify a particular outbreak spot. It hasn't been possible, for example, to localize it to a care home or a factory or a school. So I think that's the work that's ongoing. But in the meantime, being cautious, given what we've learned about this virus, seems wise.
Some suggest that the more testing you do, it's only natural that it would follow that you would find more cases. So is it a case of more testing?
I think that's true to a certain extent, but that wouldn't explain hospital admissions. You know, being tested doesn't cause you to be sick enough to go into hospital. So we have to think about it at both levels. But yes, there is always that difficulty of trying to tease out whether the numbers you're seeing are because of increased testing rates or not. But in this instance, there's more to it than the straight testing numbers.
Regarding the track and trace, Bertie, what do we know about that? Because it was heralded with you know, great fanfare, but there's lots of mixed reports, and most are critical that it's not working.
So again, I think we can expect to see this improve. To try and put it in a fairly clear way, at least for myself, it's operating at least two levels. I mean, I think the government talks about three levels, but it's easier to think of it at two levels. When somebody gets symptoms, you at an individual level, you go on the government website, you get your test, and that test result comes back, and you then get contacted so that you can tell the testing people who you've been in contact, and they get asked to self-isolate. And that's been working reasonably well. There are some problems with the speed of results, and there are some problems, I think, with identifying contacts in a timely way. But that's a functional thing. I think the next step is integrating that information with what's happening on the ground. So being able to alert public health authorities to particular outbreak spots. And I think the integration that's required needs a lot more information from that individual level. So it should be possible from that individual testing to be able to localize where are you now seeing large numbers of cases, what kind of environment is that happening in, so that the public health authorities can then actually do some local work. And it's that integration that's not being so well organized. But I think, and I hear, that there's a lot of work, certainly in the Northwest, to try and bring that work on integration of data much forward to improve that.
And just staying with testing for a second, near to where I live, and I passed it yesterday, there's a testing centre on a great big car park just around the corner from where I live. There was one person that I could see being tested and one other car in the queue. And there was a little part of me that thought, do you know, if I could just drive in there now and get tested, you know, and at least I would know if I've got it, if I've had it or whatever. But it's not that simple, is it? There's a booking system, but it was really, really quiet and I was surprised.
Well, I think if we take the business of it being quiet first, that's an indication of how much the numbers have come down, and that's good. If we take the business of booking in, it's important to remember why are we so keen on testing. It's one thing to find out yourself whether you may or may not have been infected, but the real reason we're trying to do this is so that anybody you've been in contact with can also isolate, so we prevent it. So that's why you need to book in. You need to book in so that those details of who you are and the possibility of then contact tracing can take place.
Okay. So I could be anybody, couldn't I, really, just turning up in a car and, you know, give
exactly.
Full
status. And then all you end up with is you're a number, but we're not able to do anything with the information that is helpful for the general public.
I understand. We mentioned before we're expecting an announcement from the government about schools later on, so some more details for when they go back in September. Pinch points in the schools, touch points in the schools, rather than the social distancing with the children, which was always going to be difficult with, particularly in primary schools and in any schools. You know, kids, they want to hug you and they want to hug each other. That was always going to be hard, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be cautious in answering this one because I don't know exactly what the guidance is yet that's coming out. But I can certainly see that there is sense in this idea of keeping particular year groups together and then thinking about the pinch points. And I think what's underneath that thinking is a number of things. One, that children, of course, are themselves not very vulnerable. But if you were to identify a number of cases within a particular year group, at least the numbers of people who might then be affected in terms of parents and others, it's restricted to that particular group rather than the whole school. So I can see some reasoning behind that.
And just to finish with, I'm sure you've got a crumb of comfort for us in a second, but in the last few days, just looking at figures and graphs, and I must admit, I do miss the daily information from the briefings. Whether, you know, having one a week would help, but you can find the information online. But it appears that the death rates have returned to normal, if normal is the right word to use, because people do die every single day in this country, you know, but those rates have come down now and it seems to be back to normal, if I can use that word.
Yes, it the words normal and death don't go well together, do they?
No, that's true, yeah.
But if we think about, as you say, people do die and they die at a certain rate, which we kind of can see happen over the average year. And if we look at the rates at which people died back in March 2019 and compare them with the rates of death in March 2020, March 2020 saw a massive rise by that comparison. And so what we're talking about now is that if we look at death rates for the last couple of months and we look at them relative to the death rates last year, they've come back to that kind of level. And that's good news. I mean, that was really what we were trying to achieve with all of this restriction.
And of course, we need to be cautious. The pubs and restaurants open on a Saturday, which is a bit of a strange one, really, isn't it? A soft opening from a Monday, just to ease in, but it's being dubbed as, you know, Super Saturday and July the 4th. we need to be cautious, finally, don't we?
I think we do. And I want to just say that something that maybe people don't really think about is that when we talk about 1 meter plus distancing, and this is what's going to be important in the pubs and restaurants and other places that are opening, the plus doesn't just mean staying a little bit away more than 1 meter. It means all these other things. It means when you're talking to somebody, talk side by side rather than face to face. It means making sure that the room is as ventilated as it can be. It means putting a face covering on if you're going to be closer than 2 meters. It means hand washing, and it means not shouting and not singing, which of course might be things that you tend to do in a pub. So I don't want to be the absolute killjoy, but no. Just remember that that's what the 1 meter plus means. Right.
And Bertie, just finally, your crumb of comfort. We've looked forward to these every week.
Okay, so thank you for that. This week, it's actually about something that's happened outside of the Northwest, and it's the partnership and collaboration and teamwork that is behind the opening of an oxygen plant at the Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital in Blantyre in southern Malawi. We take it for granted in our hospitals in the UK that oxygen is available for those who need it, both for COVID-19 and for other conditions. In low and middle income countries, oxygen is not routinely available in every hospital. So I'm delighted to report that after months of planning, which really started at the start of the outbreak, and with generous support from the Wellcome Trust, the Malawi Liverpool Wellcome Programme, working in partnership with local government and several others, opened an oxygen plant that will produce over 1 million litres of oxygen. Wow. For the hospital and surrounding facilities. And the Malawi Liverpool programme is a partnership between the College of Medicine in Malawi, University of Liverpool, and the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. So everything behind that is that partnership and collaboration is my real crumb of comfort and something that we all need to be proud of.
Bertie, great to talk to you. Just curb the singing for the weekend. Leave it for weekends to come. But thank you very much indeed. And always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you. There's Bertie Squire there from the School of Tropical Medicine. Yeah, with his crumb of comfort. There's a book in that, isn't there?
There is. Bertie's, you should be bringing out an anthology or something.
Yeah, get it out there. Available for Christmas. BBC Radio.